bring them up on the screen. That's brilliant. So back to the beginning. That's it. So what we are thinking about are big issues. You will recall that we've had a series on the big story where we have covered the grand narrative of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, the story of creation and new creation, all that God has done, and from our vantage point, all that God will do in the future. And what we're doing is teaming that with a series on big issues. So the big story and the big issues. And the three that we're looking at are on the screen. Creation care this week, human sexuality next week, and then racial justice. They are three big issues. In fact, they're three of the biggest issues. So just thinking about things that are really, really important, we're going to consider those together. And it is deliberate that the big story and the big issues are put together, because what I want to try and do is reflect on the issues in the light of the biblical narrative, the biblical story that begins with a wedding and ends with a wedding, the biblical story that says so much about creation, the biblical story that says so much about justice, not just individual texts, although they are really important, but the overarching story of Scripture, and actually considering those issues within the Bible's narrative, within the Bible's storyline. And the second thing is to really apply the gospel to these issues. The gospel is good news. And on all of these issues, we need to hear God's good news. So those are the two things that will guide us as we go through. And this week, it is creation care. What I want to do is just set out some of the Bible's themes and why we should be engaging with this issue, and then try to get really, really practical as we seek to apply things to our lives. So why should we care for creation? Just got three reasons here very quickly. First of all, and I think most importantly, God affirms the importance of creation. We see that in the beginning of the Bible. God created and it was good. And in Genesis 2, in Genesis 1, there is that repeated frame. It was refrain. It was good. It was good. It was good. It was very good. That is God's very good creation. And then at the end, it's a renewal of the heavens and the earth. God cares about creation. In the Psalms, creation itself bursts into praise of God, and we are called to praise him for creation. And most of all, we see that God affirms the created order in the incarnation, in the coming of Jesus. God is made flesh. God became flesh. God comes to us and just doesn't come as pure spirit, but comes as fully God and fully man. The materiality of creation is affirmed. The very stuff of life is affirmed. And as Christian men and women, as disciples of this Jesus, if God is affirming creation in these ways, then we need to affirm it too. Second thing, we're called to be stewards of creation. So Genesis 2, the passage that we read, we are called to take care of creation. There is that stewarding of what God has given. And we see that throughout the scriptures, the importance of being stewards of creation. Looking after and caring for creation is, in and of itself, a creation mandate. And finally, there is the call to love and to justice. Leviticus 18:19, love your neighbour as yourself. How is that relevant here? How are the calls for justice relevant here? I think we all know that climate change disproportionately affects the poor. I was going through various statistics that I was going to present, but actually we know this, don't we? And there is a sense in which there is no need. If you are living in sub-Saharan Africa, you are going to be more affected by climate change than if you are here in Leeds. We're all affected by it, but there is a disproportionate effect in particular areas of the world and on the poor. So it's those who are called to love our neighbour as ourselves, those who are called by Jesus to love, love the authenticating hallmark of Christian discipleship, those who are called to justice, the biblical books like Amos that speak powerfully of the need for justice. In the global village that we live in, we are to love our neighbours, and so we should be concerned about the climate. We should be concerned about creation care. But still ask the question, why bother? And I just want to, can you flip on to the next slide, Kerry? And maybe just an argument that is sometimes raised against this, that this world is just going to be burned up, it's going to disappear, it's going to pass away in its completeness, and therefore what's the point? What's the point of caring for creation? What's the point of thinking about environmental issues and acting on them? And the passage that is often gone to for this is 2 Peter chapter 3, where in some translations it speaks of the earth being burned away. But that is a mistranslation of a poor manuscript reading. And the reality is that 2 Peter 3 is speaking about the earth being laid bare. A literal translation might be the earth, that something is being found. So there is a radical rupture at the end of time when the new heavens and the new earth come in, and there is a newness and a freshness. But it's not that this earth is just completely wiped away. Rather, the dross, the mess, the sin, the compromise is burned away. And what is real and good and true is revealed and caught up into the new heavens and the new earth. We could put it like this. Is there a future for creation? And answer, yes, absolutely there is. Romans chapter 8, J.B. Phillips, old translation. The whole of creation stands on tiptoe, waiting for the sons of God to be revealed. At the end of time, when there is the resurrection, and when we take our place as Christian brothers and sisters in the new heavens and the new earth, then creation will join with us and burst into praise. Over and over again in Revelation, we see this. Creation joins us in praising God, in worshiping. There is a future for creation. So, in short, we need to care, we need to engage, because God affirms this, because we are called to be stewards, because we are called to justice and love. If God cares for this, if there is a future for creation, then we need to get on board with creation care. How do we do this? How do we do this practically? Well, just a few pointers, and this is the next slide, and the acrostic AWAKE. This is from a book on creation care by an American New Testament scholar who is also an environmentalist, Jonathan Moo. And there are five things that we can do. So attentiveness, walking, activism, consumerism. There's always one that doesn't fit, isn't there? I've said this before. And in his book, he talks about how consumerism, I've spelt it wrongly because consumerism is terrible and I'm trying to subvert it. And I say, no, you're not. You're misspelling it because it doesn't fit AWAKE if you spell it with a C. But let's leave that on one side. Consumerism and eating. And what I want to do in the second half of this is just go through these things. So attentiveness, first of all. Let's make this really, really practical. I don't know if you can see this. Cheryl, who's unwell today and is here in Madeira on our wonderful, wonderful honeymoon. We went on a walk, one of the Lavada walks. We were fairly early in the morning, and there is this place where you come out of the walk and you can see. We were just there in time because the clouds were coming down, but you could see this extraordinary view of God's creation. And the tiny bird that comes and just pecks the seed from your hand. These birds, these Madeiran chaffinches, were everywhere. And clearly it was a thing. You know, people came here, there was seed that you could get, and there were all these birds that were coming in. But there was, and so that attentiveness to creation and that celebration and joy about it, but also lament. There was a cat that was there as well. So this cat seems to have come up and has stationed itself where these birds were. And sorry to say, there were various feathers that were around that weren't attached to birds. I wanted to take the cat and obviously treat it very humanely, but sort of lead it down the mountain so that it was no longer there to attack these beautiful birds that came in. The cat was lovely as well, but it wasn't really the place for it, in my view. And so you have in a silly story, really, something about the beauty of creation, but something also about how we should lament because it is marred and spoiled. We've lamented today as we have thought about how creation has been messed up by our unfaithfulness. But we also recognize that as we pay attention to creation, it is still good, it is still beautiful, it is still wonderful, it is still God's good earth. And so, two things really to do at the beginning. Attentiveness to creation. Take some time. I'm trying to do this every day. I go to the sports page and I look at sports, and that is a great thing. But I think, well, what about having a creation page as well? Not literally, but actually getting out, having a look around, just saying a prayer of thankfulness for God's good creation. Pay attention to creation and give thanks. God calls us to do this in the Psalms and elsewhere. And lament that it has been messed up, that it has been spoiled, that we are at a critical moment and that we need to act. Attentiveness to creation. Walking is the next thing. And yeah, just one of the things that we know causes huge problems is petrol-driven vehicles. And one of the steps that we can make is to walk more often. It's just a little practical thing. Think about the transport that you use. I know that I've been travelling up and down to Reading at the moment to see my mum, and it's just made me really aware. It's an important thing to do at the moment for me, but the encouragement to me that I pass on to you is to drive less, to use other forms of transport, and if you are able to walk more. The next slide is to be involved in activism, beginning in our own churches and communities. And I don't want to apply this too specifically. One of the things that I've written down on my slide is Arusha, which is a wonderful environmental charity, and it's just so good that Chris has mentioned it already. Very much into bird watching. Yeah, that's how it started, and that's why I'm really excited about Arusha. It's one organization that you could take a real interest in. But maybe think of one thing that you could do, one letter that you could write, one group that you could join, one thing that you could do that just shows a passion for justice as far as the climate is concerned. Consumerism, learning to step back from excess to enough. I'm going to spend the most amount of time on this because I just think it's so wonderfully gospel-centered and actually comes to the heart of so much. Why do we want to reject consumerism? Well, we want to reject it because it's a justice issue, because it impacts the climate, because it impacts the poor. But also, there are so many other things that are central to us in our Christian walk. As we deny ourselves, as Jesus puts it in Mark 8, and take up our cross, and we say no to consumerism as part of that, a whole new vista opens up for us where we can say we have enough, we affirm the goodness of material creation, but time and space, both headspace and also physical time, is released so that we can worship Jesus, so that we can enjoy the goodness of creation that we already have, so that we can love, so that we can engage in gospel ministry and gospel work. Consumerism is many bad things, but one of the bad things that it is, it just eats up our time and our energy. And actually, it is a con, because it never, ever satisfies. It promises much, but it delivers little, and we always want more. As we engage in this issue, and as we step back from excess, and as we accept that enough is enough, then there is clear space that is open for us so that we can engage with Jesus, so that we can delight in him, so that we can love him more, so that we can read his words, so that we can engage in gospel ministry. Live differently. Live differently for the sake of the climate, for the sake of God's good earth, but live differently for a whole load of other reasons as well. And then finally, eating through choosing food that is grown sustainably. Our house is now nearly a vegetarian house. This is not my background, and this is not my natural taste buds. Cheryl is a pescatarian. I never heard that word before I started going out with her. She eats fish, and she eats fish sometimes. And obviously, you don't want to prepare two meals, so I've sort of slipped in with this. And actually, it's okay. I still enjoy a bit of chicken. I still enjoy some red meat, but I've cut down on it. And actually, it's okay, and actually, it's good. And the decisions that we take about this are really personal decisions. I guess I'm a flexitarian, and that really is a thing. So I do some teaching for St. Hill College, as you know, absolutely wonderful. Our principal, Mark Powley, bounced up to me one day and said, "Peter, I've become a flexitarian." And I laughed, as you did just then. I thought, "You're making a joke. What does that mean?" But actually, it's a thing. You can look it up online. And basically, it means that you eat meat sometimes, but not very often. You might eat meat when you're out, or you might eat meat when you're offered it by someone, but you don't eat meat very often. What very often means is not closely defined in the things that I've read. And I guess you could probably say, well, you have one less meat meal a week, and that makes me a flexitarian, and that's fine by me. But is there something here that we can do? And red meat in particular is really damaging to the climate, and yeah, maybe sometimes, but not as often as I've been used to it in the past. My cooking, I had one signature dish, which was spaghetti bolognese. It was literally the only thing that I could do. And I'd honed it perfectly. So people used to say, "Oh, you're a great cook." But then when they came round again, it was the same meal, and it was the same meal, and it was the same meal. "No, you're not a great cook. You can just do this one thing." But I've now branched out, and I can do other things. And I can do vegetarian food, and it's cool, and it's good. What chapter? Thank you very much. I'm really encouraged. I'm really encouraged by this. What is it that we can do? What practical steps can we take? We're going to the very final slide now, and it just puts up the awake stuff again. And I just want us to pause and to reflect on this. And if it's not too much, just think of one thing that you can do that fits into each of those categories. So five things in total. Attentiveness. How can you pay attention to God's good creation? Walking. How can you change your habits in terms of transport? Perhaps in just a small way. What step is God calling you to take? What activism? What one thing can you do? Consumerism, that shift that calls us to make, that God calls us to make from wanting more and wanting more and wanting more and trying to find satisfaction in things, that shift over to delighting in God, to delighting in his work, to engaging in gospel ministry, to living more simply in order that we may live more freely. So many benefits, so many wonderful things that come to us when we do that. And it helps us to care for creation. And eating, how can we make one or two changes to our lifestyle that will make a difference? We can all make a difference here. I can make a difference here. And we are called to make that difference as Christian disciples. If we follow God, then we follow the one who came to us in Jesus and affirmed the materiality of creation. If we follow God as disciples of the Lord Jesus, then we are called to be stewards of his good creation. And we are called to have a passion for justice. Because of all those things, let's care for creation as Christian disciples. And God will be with us as we go. I'm going to hand over to Chris, who's going to take us through the rest of the service as the children come back in.
Thanks, Peter. We're going to stand and we're going to sing in praise to God again.